Let's meet first here in the silence. Taking your seat. Letting your body breathe out. Landing on this hard plastic chair or soft fluffy cushion, or letting the muscles of your backside soften as we can keep lowering ourselves deeper and deeper to take our seat on this earth, literally. Will you let your out breath right now drop you further into your legs? Into your hands. Can you feel the resistance to wanting, if it's there at all, the resistance to fully taking your seat? And if there is no resistance, keep following the pull of the gravity, where we can be both upright and at the same time deeply enfleshed in the human realm, with all its pain and its beauty, its uncertainty, its inability to ever give us a final home, its creativity, its joy, its devastation and loss. Breathing out. You are here. Breathing in, enlivening and brightening the mind, and breathing out, letting the cells soften, maybe even melt a tiny little bit, to release our grip, the grip of resisting life, the grip of trying to become someone different, the grip of control, of fixing, whatever grips you might have got going. And just for now, nothing is required of you. There's no one you have to be or become. And in that refuge, breathe out. Feel the basic material matter of your backside and your bones and your legs and your arms. It might be solid, it might feel light. How do you know you have a body right now, apart from the concept that says, yeah, last time I looked, I had a body? Right now, how do you know you have a body from the inside? Hard, soft, warm, cold, tight, loose, pain, pleasure, tingling, pulsing, heart beating, breathing, whatever it is, whatever lets you know that you're here, beyond just the concept that you're here, right? Because we all know you're here. That this immediate, unvarnished, raw, living presence, this is where we're going to wake up. This is where we're going to learn to embody our insight. This is where everything we seek, whether we call it calm, refuge, peace, awakening, relief, the end of suffering, the fullness of my expression in the world, whatever it is, however we word it, it's this doorway of the immediate open door where life is, where the birds are singing and we hear the birds singing, where our body is breathing and we know we're breathing, where the fingers are pulsing and we know they're pulsing, where the heart is aching or the heart is loving and we know. So let's spend a few minutes just arriving in this, dropping, for many of us, dropping from the head down a little bit into this material substance of body. Let's sit for a few minutes, mindfulness of body breathing. How do you know you have a body, a breathing body right now? Follow that. Keep that question fresh and let's sit and know that you're sitting. And then I'll introduce the breath. So breathing in and breathing out. Ordinary. The grip of the mind may be there. What am I supposed to do? Where is this going? Seeing the grip of the mind and breathing out. Give yourself, out of compassion, another track to follow. For now, relinquishing the stories that the mind comes up with and the grip of trying to know what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, do I like it, do I not like it? No rest there. Breathing out, right to the end of the out-breath, following it, listening to the silence at the end of the out-breath. How do you know you have a breathing body right now? unhooking from the compulsion to spin thought, dropping the shoulders, breathing out, training the mind towards freedom by being less compelled. There's no freedom in being compelled to think. Thinking is fine, but we bond to it, glue to it, stick to it. It pulls us. We get blown around like a leaf in the wind. If we want to discover something new, can we train this muscle to unhook from that seduction for now? Come back to the out-breath, ordinary, unglamorous. It doesn't immediately tell you who you are. Developing a taste for something less compelled and fixated. Let the heart be drawn to the whisper and the call of what is not already known. And for the last couple of minutes, how do you know you have a breathing body right now? Beyond the idea, what tells you? The raw data. Can you come and be that simple for a few minutes, training the mind to enfold back into this tide of breath? And just for this breath, follow it right to the end of the out breath. See where it takes you. Follow it into the silence. Are you willing? May all beings rest deeply in the stillness. May all beings rest deeply in activity. And may all beings know peace. So, welcome. You ready for work? Have you come to get away from work? So I just want to know who's here. Some of you I know, or at least I think I know, right? I've met with you many years or seen you in many retreats or some people I don't know at all. And the theme of today is about embodying your insight. So that's hopefully what I'm going to speak about and guide us in and for us to look and contemplate that. But I want to know what your a little bit about your background, practice experience. Just want to check, is anybody here consider themselves new to any form of meditation whatsoever? Raise your hands if you're willing. You're very welcome to be here. Absolutely. Anybody completely new to any meditative arts? Okay. Anybody completely new to anything either called insight meditation or the mindfulness-based worlds? Anybody new to that terrain? Hello. Welcome. Welcome. Okay. Anybody primarily come here via the mindfulness-based either stress reduction or cognitive behavioral or that whole beautiful world that's opened up in the last 15 years? Yeah. Great. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. Anybody willing to say they're a really old timer at Insight Meditation? Please. Please own up. You're here. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Yeah, you're here. Some of you aren't putting your hands up. Why is it hard to admit? Why is it hard to say? You're too humble. You understand true humility. Right. And any other traditions that you also include in your heart, whatever backgrounds you've come from, spiritual or otherwise, all of it's actually part of who we are, isn't it? All of it are. It's all here, actually, on the seat. Oh, welcome. So I'll take time for people who consider themselves newer or newish to these kind of practices, but I'll be speaking mostly from a basis of assuming something about the realm of insight is familiar to you. It doesn't mean you have to sit there going, oh my God, have I ever had any insights? You have, all of you have, or else you wouldn't be here. Your insights may or may not have arisen through spiritual practice in any formal way. Living and being a little bit awake, we can't help at times to get insight, right? Insight can sometimes be a very quiet kind of waking up to the truth of something. Sometimes it can be a little bit more dramatic. Neither is more important than the other. And I'll speak a little bit about insight, but mostly today I want to look at how do we live what we understand? How do we live it? Because probably you've all seen something very deeply in your life, whether it's like a more sort of classical, obvious spiritual opening to a new way of looking at the world, whether it's through just the living and the losing, the loving and the losing. You know, that if we're here long enough, and some people have that very early, the loving and the losing, whether through death or parting, that our heart gets, oh yeah, somehow that's part of this realm, isn't it? It's not because I've done something wrong. If we still think it's because we've done something wrong, then we need insight into that. It's not. It belongs to the human realm. Many things. The fact that we can't ever, in this material realm, find a place where we can go, right, done, got it, comfortable, finished. Thank you very much. This human material realm is subject to the laws of nature. In nature, things are constantly, unstoppably, dynamically arising, unfolding, and changing. They're not fixable, stoppable, keepable, haveable, but they're lovable, touchable, knowable, impactable. But we can't ever make that final house here, can we? The final house where we've got all the security down. Makes me smile now. Sometimes it doesn't sound like good news, does it? But it's just how it is. So living our insight is living in harmony with the way things are, right? But that's not so easy. That's not so easy. How come I know, on one level, that if I cling to someone, I'll suffer? How come I know that, actually? Buddha talks about it all the time, and I've seen it deeply in my heart. And how come I can still find myself doing that. Without making that wrong, not at all, because the judgment around this does never liberate the heart, does it? When we, if you've ever had a spiritual critic on your shoulder saying, are you still doing that? You mean you're still saying stuff like that? The spiritual critic does not release the heart. That's the first thing we have to see. The gap between what we know and how we can live is the gap to bring to the temple for contemplation. That's where, you know, the root of that word is. It's the gap to bring into the realm of loving, the loving gaze of our awareness. The temple is the place, the contemplation, that we lay something at the altar where the divine presence, well, it isn't something else, the divine presence of our attention, our mindfulness, our interest, our curiosity, our investigation, that what that gap, that painful gap between what we know and how we can live, we bring that here. And we look and we feel and we explore and get interested, because right there at that altar is where the transformation can happen. So it needs a sacred space. It doesn't work through judgment. We can do a little bit of the spiritual path through being hard on ourselves. But soon our heart will dry up and we'll feel bruised and we'll leave. Or we'll try and squeeze ourselves tighter into who I think I should be. Any of you have those images of who you think you should be? Either the worldly should be or the spiritual should be. Miserable, isn't it? It's the gap. Spiritual practice is about closing the gap. Closing the gap between the way things are and the way I think they should be. Closing the gap brings us to this immediate open door where it all happens, right? Where the breath is, where the body is, where our heart is, our feelings, our mind, our awareness, our clear seeing, our investigation, our mindfulness, our faith, our interest, right here. As that gap closes, we see and we wake up and we can live. So what's going to help us close the gap? So let's first welcome and sometimes it's useful to articulate to yourself or to another any of the slight or actual images you have of who you think you're supposed to become. And sometimes they're not even articulated, they're unconscious, we're living it, we're pushing ourselves, we're disappointed in ourselves, we're hard on ourselves, we're squeezing ourselves, because we have an image of what I ought to look like. Yes, in the worldly sense that would be physically, in the spiritual sense it would be on the inside. What I'm supposed to look like if I was sorted, if I was done, if I was good, if I would, whatever it is. Might even be images or ideas you have about awakening. The goal of the path from the Buddha, the waking up to I wasn't going to talk about awakening, but it looks like I've begun a sentence about it now. Images of awakening, whatever in your mind those images are of waking up, what are they? Do you have any? Like, would you be all shiny and serene, or would you be like dynamic and fiery? Like, you know, what's the image? And to bring it into practical terms, I remember there was one Dharma teacher who I really loved, and I still love her, when I began practice. And she sort of embodied this ideal of what I thought you would get to when you'd practiced a lot, as if everybody gets to the same thing, and it expresses as the same thing. Wouldn't that be a drag, actually, if all awakened beings all were the same? God, I don't think I'd be up for that. I mean, you know, that's not what life does, is it? Life is... doesn't render us kind of homogenized. Freedom is, yes, to know what's universal, that is not personal at all. Absolutely, that's what frees us. But who is it that expresses that? Who is it that wakes up in that? It's you. So this one teacher, somehow she had the ideal, and her qualities were her degree of realization. She was, in my perception, lovely. She was also, I don't know how to put the words on it, but when my mum met her, this is 25 years ago, and I lived at the retreat center. It was a Buddhist retreat center. My mum's Christian, and my mum met this woman. She goes, "Oh, Kat, she's really close to God, isn't she?" Right? She could feel whatever that was for my mum, something about some sort of transparency or light or serenity or whatever it was she saw. That was her language for it, something that she saw. So, not because my mum said it, but I liked her. So I was like, okay, that's who I've got to. Right? When I practice a bit more and I sort myself out a bit more, I'm going to be like her. And it's beautiful because it inspires love and faith and possibility, and we see examples of people who are along the path of waking up. But the more I practiced, the less and less I appeared to myself to be anything like her. And the images, at some point, the gap between what's arising and the images, there's pain there. There's a gap. Theirs can be a self-rejection implicit in the ideal images we have. And whether it's someone we've met or whatever we think the Buddha was, you know, those images will be there, even if they're not articulated in your mind. Even if you don't have any spiritual baggage yet, there'll be worldly images of being whatever it is, a good person or a, you know, kind person, what a kind person should look like. One of my teachers said, supposing you're a, he said mango tree, but supposing the seeds of a mango tree are you, your potentiality, but what you want to be is a rose. And every time the mango tree, it's like, no, not that, not what's here, whatever gnarly soil it has to come through, I don't know what happens with mangoes, you know, whatever process is that happens for us through our pain, through our detritus, through our residues, through our love, through our, right, every time we see what comes, like, no, I don't want bark, I want a rose, I want to be like red and delicate. Not this. And that self-rejection, implicit, very often for many of us, in any one moment, when we think that what is here is not the thing that is the doorway for my liberation and my embodiment. We make a split, and I'll speak a little bit more about that later. A split between many, many things, actually. Many things. So if we are to embody our insight, it will be in your location. And that might be very obvious to the mind. Of course it's going to be in my location. But do we really get that? Can you feel that? It's those flesh and bones and heart and history that comes to the table. So when we practice today in the formal practice, the sitting and the walking, it's this body. Even if it's sick or healthy, old or young, how we want it or not how we want it. It's right here that's the fertile substance of both body and heart-mind, the citta, that transforms in the body to both realize and to live that realization. Can you see in the mind how tempting it can be to make the goal far off? Do you ever see that? Oh, later, you know, when she stopped talking, or, you know, tomorrow, or when I'm 40, or, you know, once I've got rid of this cold, or... No. Both the realization and the actualization, meaning living it, happen in this unvarnished, warts and all, nobility and all, location. So today, your location is the place for practice. It's always the case, isn't it? Nothing new there. But do we really get it? Though everything we seek isn't going to happen someplace else. Drawing that back to this step as I walk, touch the earth, this feeling as it arises, this heat and sun on my face and the pleasure or the not pleasure in that. Keeping it really basic. And then we'll explore a little bit how to close the gap so we can live what we deeply know on some level, whatever that is for you. And making it very practical, one of the first places I saw this gap, I was in India, perhaps just beginning to listen to teachings 24 years ago or 25 years ago. And I was listening outside, there was a Tibetan teacher teaching in a big tent with a translator and loudspeakers. And the translator said something like, first the Tibetan teacher spoke and then the translator said something like, yes, there's love and the near enemy, something that looks like love but is not love, is attachment, right? And something very basic, very common teaching. And he said it and I was stood there, I was outside, I didn't want to go in yet, wasn't ready for that. I was outside and I got it. It's like, oh, right, I know that here, I know that, but I don't really know it. I don't really know it yet. I don't really know it in myself, in my heart, in my feet, in my hands. What lets our insights come into fertile, more and more fertility, fertile ground? So let's